The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Oil and gas prices in the United States and Europe are about to explode a lot higher, and I'm going to tell you why. Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Chris Martinson, founder of peakprosperity.com and creator of The Crash Course, the viral video series that connects energy, the economy, and the environment into one synthesized whole. Hey, I'm your information scout. I want to separate fact from fiction, bring you actionable information that you can't afford to live without. And it's so important that you have the right information today here in these times. So let's start here with this. Why are these prices about to skyrocket higher? I thought everything was about to be fine. In fact, if we look at them, we can see here that's diesel over here on this side surging ever since the Iran war, and gasoline prices starting at $2.26 per gallon in 2020, marching their way a little bit higher, but then all of a sudden taking this big jump in 2026, $4.25 as of April 6th. Today is the 13th, and they're forecasted to reach $4.40 this month. Now, why are they going higher? I thought the United States has tons of oil and gas. These are U.S. prices, but same dynamic is going to apply to Europe as well. Well, here's what Donald J. Trump just boasted about recently. He said, quote, massive numbers of completely empty oil tankers, some of the largest anywhere in the world, are heading right now to the United States to load up with the best and sweetest oil and gas anywhere in the world. We have more oil than the next two largest oil economies combined and higher quality. We're waiting for you. Quick turnaround, President DJT, end quote. First up, it's always empty oil tankers that are headed towards your port to load up. That's how it is. They fill up, they drop it off somewhere, and they come back empty. So that's how that normally works. And a lot of people have been pushing this around, showing all of these tankers heading towards the U.S. And it's true, the map kind of always looks like this. There are always oil tankers heading to and from the United States. A reported 68 of those Congo Line tankers are very, very large crude carriers, the big ones that can carry up 2 million barrels each. Truth is, the United States has been exporting a little more here through the end of March into April. And so we can see these 2 months right here, kind of high, hitting almost just tad over 5 million barrels a day. But otherwise, notice that it's sort of been parked at about 3.9, say 3.8, 4.1, but say about just under 4 to slightly over 4. Call it 4. It'll go to 5. That's extra 1 million barrels a day. It's about all that the United States can actually handle because it's a logistical problem, right? You have tankers always coming and going anyway. Once they pull up to a berth, it takes time to load them. So you're constrained by the actual capacity of any particular oil port to put more in the tank. Meanwhile, so if we notice, the United States might be able to add 1 million barrels per day, and we're going to talk about where that comes from in just a second. While we might be able to add 1 million barrels per day to the overall supply situation, it bears noting that the OPEC plus configuration, they went from about 33 here million barrels per day of production, losing 8 million. 8 million barrels per day is now completely missing in action. So the United States is not going to be able to cover that shortfall, full stop. So how do we make sense of this? I was going to say unfortunately, but it's not unfortunately. Look, we live in a complicated world, and if you want to understand it, sometimes you have to take the time, dive in. So you know me, that's what we do. We're going to take a little dive here, and oil statistics are things I've been looking at for a couple decades, and I'm reasonably comfortable with what I'm looking at. The whole thing is actually a hot mess. Like, you could look at, that's a lot of numbers, Chris. What are we going to do with that? But the EIA, the Energy Information Administration in the United States, puts together this really excellent accounting every week. That's too much. Let's dial in. Let's sneak in a little bit. So it starts with two things, like how much do we have in inventory? They call that stocks. And then how much do we have in supply? So stocks and flows, right? You have some that's sitting there in storage, and you have some that's coming in and being produced on a routine basis. Here's the thing about oil. Here's the whole mystery of it. It comes out of the ground. It gets stored for a little while. We separate it into components that we then mostly set on fire. So It comes out of the ground and gets burned. So these are the two big categories we have to look at here is stocks and supply. So let's start with production. Okay. This is the first thing we need to know. Production, by the way, has been flattening out, and the U.S. remains a net importer of crude oil. We do not export any crude oil on a net basis. Here's how this shakes out. So it turns out we import in this last week ending on April 3rd, we imported 6.3 million barrels per day. 6.3 million barrels per day we imported. And we also exported 4.1 million barrels a day, leaving a net import-export number of 2.175 million barrels. So the United States, every single day in the week prior to April 3rd, was importing 2.175 million barrels of oil a day, a net importer. So we don't have any extra to import. If you're a net importer, you don't have any extra to export. It's just, you just don't. So we're not exporting crude oil. This is where it gets weaselly, because the U.S. EIA a while ago, much to my regret, started confusing all of this and started calling it, oh, but we're a net petroleum exporter, as if petroleum was oil. They're not. They're very different things. So that's what we need to talk about, is how they are just very different things. By the way, when I say domestic production is flattening out, look, it was down 61,000 barrels a day. And from a year ago, it's only up 138,000 barrels per day. Now that sounds good. It's headed in the right direction, but it's really flattening out. In fact, the peak, all-time monthly peak for U.S. oil production was in October of 2025. So about 6 months ago. And that's the nature of the beast. It's starting to flatten out a little bit. But first point, what we need to say is the United States is a net importer of crude oil. Now we go to this confusing part where it's called petroleum. Let's go to the second part of this story. And next slide, please. Yeah, I should also point out, but before I move on too much further, sorry, I forgot this point. I put it in, but it needs to be told. SPR, that's the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or some call it the Strategic Political Reserve, because it was mostly drained under Biden's term to try and get gas prices lower prior to the 2022 election. But you can see here that all that's really coming out is 248,000 barrels per day over the last week of that was reported. That's really not very much, considering that there's 8,000 or 9,000 barrels per day lost from the Gulf, the Persian Gulf. So this 248,000 barrels a day is coming out of U.S. strategic stockpiles, but it's really not a lot. I mean, if we really wanted to make a dent in this, how do we make a dent in 8 million to 9 million barrels per day missing, depending on how it's being counted? So that's a big issue right there. So yes, we're draining our SPR, but not really at a rate that makes a very big dent in the current situation in the world. Now we get to the part where it's confusing, the other confusing part. It's called other supply. Other supply here is, oh my goodness, 10 million barrels per day. This is whopping it. It's up 808,000 barrels per day. This is where the United States is absolutely crushing it. But it's mostly the stuff called natural gas plant liquids. Don't worry, we're going to talk through exactly what that means in just a second. We also have renewable fuels, which is mostly corn-based ethanol. You know what? Surprise. Nobody really wants that stuff. So that we just make that and we mix it into our own domestic gas supply to make it a worse substance, actually. I hate ethanol in my gasoline. It's very bad for two-cycle engines. It's very bad for, I don't think it's good for any engines. It's not great stuff. So I kind of sort of mentally wipe that stuff out. But now we can see that what happens here is net imports is minus 5.7 million barrels per day of this stuff. This stuff is headed out the door. And so it's mostly this stuff right here, natural gas plant liquids. Now, what the heck is that stuff? All right. Here we're going to notice, too, I already said that. All right, what are natural gas plant liquids? Okay, little chemistry here. Remember, there's things called molecules, and then there's things called atoms, right? And atoms are those things on the periodic table, things like hydrogen, helium, lithium, Carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, those are atoms, right? They're irreducible and they're permanent. Molecules are when two or more atoms come together. And in gas, in natural gas liquids, the highest, the simplest thing to talk about would be methane. It's one carbon atom with four hydrogen atoms sticking off of it to make a molecule of methane. Some people call it methane. I don't know why. What's next up from that is we took two carbons and we stick them together, and that's what this represents here. There's two carbons here. They dink, dink, and then these little things would be hydrogens around the end. That's why they'd be called hydrocarbons. So ethane is the first thing that comes out. That's about 40% of the total volume of that natural gas plant liquid output. So if we look at this and we say, wow, 10 million, you know, 7.7 million barrels of natural gas plant liquids, about 40% of that's going to be ethane. And it's good stuff. It goes, ethane mostly goes into industrial processes. It's a feedstock precursor for all kinds of things. You make plastics out of it. You can make all kinds of different resins. You can combine it. It's a pretty cool, very useful substance. But you can't pave a road with it. You can't put it into a jet plane. And you can't run a ship on it. And you can't put it in a car. It's not gasoline. It's not diesel. It's not asphalt. It's a very, very light, small substance, which has limited uses. Next up is if we take a third carbon. Now we have three carbons put together. Carbon, carbon, carbon. In this hydrocarbon here, that's propane. Propane is three carbons. And that's about 30%. So if you just understand ethane and propane, you now have 70% of the total volume of natural gas plant liquids, of which we have so much, 7.7 million barrels a day of this stuff coming out of the ground. We can't even use that much in the United States. So what do you do with it? You export it. And then you say, oh, we're a net petroleum exporters, because they call this stuff petroleum, even though oil itself is made of things that are usually like 8, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 carbon long chains. Very heavier stuff, much heavier stuff. All right. So there we have 70%. What gets us almost the rest of the way there is something called butane or isobutane, which is a configuration of this where you just rearrange the molecule into a slightly different shape. That's four carbons, one, two, three, four carbons, and the rest are hydrogens. Now we're up to 85% of the total volume of natural gas plant liquids. And here's what it looks like. The United States is indeed exporting gobs of this stuff, three plus million barrels per day. And it's made up a little bit of ethane. We got to get rid of the propane. We don't need it. Other countries love it. They cook with it. It's great. And butane and what's called natural gasoline, which is a five carbon thing that comes out of the ground from some of our shale plays. All right. That's what we're exporting a lot of. And here's why it matters, because people talk about petroleum as if it's one thing. And sometimes they talk about oil as if it's a thing, like water. You know, I'm talking about water. But you and I might recognize that salt water plays a little different than fresh water, particularly if you're stuck in a life raft. And also some waters are very hard and some are saltier and some of them have good minerals and some are sweeter. So even there, we might understand that water has some differences. Oil is just the same. Every single grade of oil that comes out of every single field in the world is slightly different from all the other ones in some times minor ways, but in sometimes very, very important ways. Now, if we look at what you can do with these natural gas liquids, the uses like, well, look, ethane is used for plastics, petrochemical feedstock. End use might be plastic bags, antifreeze, detergents. Primary use, it's an industrial product. That's what we use ethane for, mostly. Propane, well, residential and commercial heating. It's a cooking fuel, also a petrochemical feedstock. Small stoves, barbecues, liquid LPG, right? Liquefied petroleum gas. This is pretty good stuff. It's used, well, I use it. We have propane gas grills out here on the back. And then there's butane, which, you know, you find in a lighter. You might blend it with the gasoline to a certain extent. You could make synthetic rubber for tires out of it. You can convert it into LPGs, maybe a really, you know, lighter fuels like that, industrial and transportation. Isobutane, same thing, same idea. It's also four carbon, just the carbons are arranged differently. Pentane is natural gasoline, and it's a blowing agent for polystyrene foam. You can use it in polystyrenes, and then it goes up from there. So the point here is that each one of these things has a different use in a different place. You would never try and substitute ethane for a pentane. They're separate things. So this is why I said I sort of decry that the EIA put it all in one big bucket and said, oh, we're a net petroleum exporter. They call this stuff petroleum, but it's not. It's not oil. If in your mind, petroleum is synonymous with oil. They might say hydrocarbon, you know, that would be more accurate. If they said, hey, we're a net hydrocarbon exporter, that's fine. But you might say, well, which ones? Because each one goes different places, it has different uses, and it's going to have a very different end use. Like, you could have all the propane you want. I'll give you a bajillion barrels of propane, but you're not going to be running any airplanes on it. You're not going to be paving any roads with it. You're not going to be doing all kinds of different things with it. Now, because here's where we are. This steep upward price pressure is going to increase now because the United States is committed to higher exports of crude and finished products. We're going to be exporting more of this stuff. So here we see in green, this is WTI crude oil. And here we see gasoline. And here we see heating oil all going up in price. And that is going to continue to go up in price, particularly with this news, which says Fox just said 121 empty oil tankers headed to the U.S. to fill up on our great gasoline. At about a million barrels each, some of them are going to be 2 million barrels, some are going to be 500,000, call it a million barrels each. That's 120 million barrels out the door. Okay, where's that going to come from? Because before the war, every single molecule that came out of the ground, whether it was oil, crude oil, you know, condensate, natural gas plant liquids, they already had customers. It's not like we just started piling up huge amounts of them somewhere. Normally, inventories are kept in a very tight range. And when they fall below that range, markets get a little nervous and they bid the prices up. When they go above that range, markets say, ooh, we've got too much because where are we going to even store this stuff? And so prices come back down again. Inventory management is a big part. So that's the whole oil business. Stocks and flows, right? What's our inventory? How much is going to keep coming out of the ground? Now, as I told you, the United States has a fairly steady amount coming out of the ground of crude oil over the past year. We got a lot more of these natural gas plant liquids coming out of the ground as compared to a year ago. 800,000 barrels per day more. Totally abundant in that stuff. But crude oil? It's been kind of flat for a while, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But let's go to the stocks now. This is inventories as of April 8th, and here you can see that the commercial crude oil, commercial plus the strategic political reserve, petroleum reserve, it's crept up a bit here from just under 850, call that 840, to about 940. It's about 100 million barrels. That's pretty cool. But look at this, jet fuel. Jet fuel is also called kerosene. That's been going down this entire year. So if we said we're going to start supplying Europe with kerosene, no, we're not, because we're going to be falling right out of the bottom of this 10-year range soon, and then it won't be cool. Like I said, when you get above your inventory threshold, prices come down. When you get below, people get nervous, prices go up. So we don't have a lot of that to export. Gasoline, right in the middle of the range, not a lot to talk about there for gasoline. Total inventories, we're at the bottom. I'd say if this was a class, this black line, if it was a person, would be in the bottom fifth of the class. So we're not totally stocked to the gills here in the United States with inventories, in part because we sold a lot of our SPR off in 2022. Now, diesel and gasoline have been heading higher. As I've said, they're going to continue to head higher, and the price of oil is going to head higher too, and here's why. Here we can see total production of crude oil in the United States, and this is in thousands of barrels. This is on a monthly basis here, so this is going to be 300 million barrels per month coming out. So each one of these little line wriggles is a month. You can see here from 2017 to 2020, an enormous expansion of oil coming out of the ground. And, COVID, things took a little while to settle back out. And then there was this other enormous expansion period. But notice here, for 2.5 years, oil production coming out of the ground has gone basically nowhere. It's pretty flat. And it's going to stay flat until and unless oil prices get a lot higher to encourage more stuff coming out of the ground. Now, this isn't surprising. You know why this isn't surprising? Because oil is like farming in the sense that you will only be incentivized to plant more in a field if pr- prices are high enough for the product that you're going to grow in that field. Same with oil. The problem with oil prices is they've been heading down for those same number of years. Since 2022, when it hovered here at $100, $120 a barrel right here, bing, it's been just going down ever since. And then it was settling down here at around 60, 65, which wasn't enough to get more, a lot more coming out of the ground. And now we have this Gulf crisis happening right here. We'll see how that settles out. But just to put in context, we're about back to where we were in 2022, which was, of course, the onset of the Ukraine war, a much, much more minor damage or impact happened on oil availability then, but it was enough to drive the price easily up to 110, 120 a barrel. Right now, the oil price is being heavily contained and capped by someone. Everybody knows that it's the United States government somehow, either directly or through proxies, has been actively suppressing the price of oil, which they can only do for about another week here before it starts to really blow up on them, figuratively speaking. So this is going to be a problem. They're holding it down for now. I think it's going to be absolute market chaos when they finally lose control of this. Remember, you heard it here. And, listen to me now, believe me later. As expected, however, the United States crude oil exports actually decreased in 2025 for the first time since 2021. That's because, as I showed you, our production has been actually getting a little flattened out on crude oil. And again, they say crude oil exports. They don't mean that. What they mean here is they mean petroleum exports. I can't believe they mislabel these things, because we're not exporting any crude oil, as I said. What we're exporting are the natural gas plant liquids. Calling it crude oil, which is wrong. Even calling it petroleum is wrong. Calling it hydrocarbons would be more accurate. That's okay. Be a stickler about that. But even with all that extra stuff coming out of the ground, we haven't had a whole lot extra to actually export. So that's flattening out a bit. As well, we don't have a lot left in reserve, our strategic petroleum reserve. You can see here in 1982, after the oil crisis, we built a big one up. And then in late 90s, we also built another big one up. And we were holding 700 million to 750 million barrels in that strategic petroleum reserve. And then all of a sudden, sold it all off coming into the 2022 elections to see how that could work. Let's talk about that SPR for a second, because what do we have in our, what is a strategic petroleum reserve? Does it have any natural gas plant liquids in it? It does not. It just consists of oil. Even though we call it the petroleum reserve, it's only oil. See, we shouldn't have term confusion like this at all. Giovanni Stevano says here that this is U.S. SPR crude inventories broken out into sweet versus sour. This is the sour crude. Sour because it has sulfur in it. Sour, it's a medium grade, probably a heavy-ish grade, which is good stuff. Our refiners love that stuff. So that was what mostly got drawn down here coming into 2022, until finally the light sweet crude also started to get drawn down. And then of the two, only really the sour crude has recovered a bit here, which is pretty good. That's almost 60 million barrels in storage. That's great. Light sweet, not so much. That's what we're exporting. So when I showed you we were importing some oil, exporting other oil, we export the light stuff because we don't have any need for it. We need the heavier stuff for reasons. When we say strategic petroleum reserve, what are we talking about? They're actually big, giant, empty caverns underground, salt domes where salt was mined. And now they've been filled back up with oil. So we've got them here at Bryan Mound, Big Hill, West Hackberry, the Bayou Choctaw. That's the SPR. Exists in things right there. Now, here's where we get down to it. Oil isn't oil. It all has very different uses and very different reasons that a refinery would be interested in refining it. So a refinery takes this stuff called oil, and it's actually a mix of things. It's a lot of different things. It's not like water, which is slightly different, because maybe you have salt in it. This consists of everything from the two carbons to threes to fours to fives to sixes to sevens to eights to nines, tens to all those things are different products, as it were. And the goal or the job of a refinery is to get those things apart from each other. And it's a little bit confusing how they talk about this, but it's with something called API gravity. And it's a measure of how heavy the oil is. And weirdly, because of how numbers probably work in your head, the lower the number, the heavier it is. And the higher the number, the lighter it is. Okay? So I know. I won't get into all the wonkiness behind it, but it is what it is. So you might get something with an API gravity of 10 called extra heavy. It'll barely pour. In fact, you probably could move it easier with a spatula. It's thick. That's the stuff mostly Venezuela has, that stuff. It has almost no gasoline in it. Might have no gasoline. Has almost no kerosene in it. Ugh. Very little diesel in there. But it has a whole lot of this stuff called atmospheric residue, which is fuel oil, which is the stuff that they put into ships and things like that. Now, if you spend a lot of money and you can take those big, giant, nasty, heavy molecules and crack them and break them into littler pieces, then you can actually turn it into those other things. But out of the ground, API 10 mostly gives you bunker oil, bunker fuel. Then you get to 20. It's called heavy. It's pretty heavy oil. It's about 9% gasoline, 8% kerosene or jet fuel, 18% diesel, about 65% bunker oil. This is the sweet spot, 30 to 40. This is what everybody wants. And that's why you saw that medium sour get drawn down in the SPR first, because this is what our refineries are actually tuned for, this stuff, because you get a really nice blend of things. You get a good mix out of it when you refine it. It's considered medium, about 19% gasoline, 14% jet fuel, 17% diesel, 50% this stuff, and you know the bunker fuel. And you get some asphalt out of it. You get some heavier oils, waxes, things like that that you can actually do other things with. And then you get into 40s. This is light, pretty light. 40 is pretty light. Not bad, but pretty light when you get from 40 to 50. It's about, you can see how the gasoline is just heading up as a proportion of this as you head up or down the API gravity chain. I know the numbers go up, but anyway. 17 and 16% for jet fuel and diesel, respectively, and about 10% atmospheric or fuel oil. This stuff down here, the U.S. shale plays are almost entirely this stuff, 40 to 50, some of them are 60, and it's just very, very light stuff. What do you not get out of that stuff? Well, you don't get some of this heavier stuff that you actually need to run your country. If all we had was this stuff down here, 50, we wouldn't be able to run any ships with their bunker fuel, and we wouldn't have any asphalt to repave our roads with. We would be missing some vital components that we need for our life. So that's what's happened. These shale plays have been amazing. They've, you know, absolutely given the world a lot of this great, wonderful oil, but it's not the oil that the U.S. refiners need. And so that's why we export this stuff, the 40, 50 stuff, and we import the 20, 30 stuff. That's what we do here in the United States. So that's a very difficult thing to change quickly, and nobody's going to change it and try and swap that over just because a war maybe has temporarily disrupted the flows of things. So the United States is going to continue to try and get some of this stuff, the 30 grade stuff, and we're going to see how much of this 40, 50 stuff we can sell to the rest of the world. And the rest of the world's happy with it for the most part. But it's not something that you can just easily swap out. So I hope I've impressed upon you at least this much. This is very complicated territory here. And these cartoonish things about how we're swimming in oil and we're just going to sell oil to the world. We can't. There's nothing we can do to make up for the loss out of the Gulf. It's not like, well, the Gulf lost their customers. Those customers will come here. We do not here in the United States have an extra 8 million barrels a day. We just don't. So they're going to try and export a lot of this stuff. You know what's going to happen? They're going to have to dip into inventories. Maybe we'll be ripping out of our SPR and selling that to the world for a little while, as long as we can stand the pain of that. We'll be doing whatever we can to try and keep the markets calm. But this is, it's only got maybe 2 to 4 weeks here left before this really breaks wide open. So that's why I wanted to alert you to this, because it's not just going to be higher prices at the gas pump. There's all kinds of disruptions that happen when you suddenly starve the world for a grade of oil that refiners are tuned for, and you can't just easily swap some new oil in for that process, because you're missing all kinds of vital things, including the byproduct, sulfur, very important in the story. And if we round this out, last slide here, this is what's actually missing from the Persian Gulf. You got your bulk carriers in green on the bottom. You got your chemical product tankers here in the darker green. You got your container ships carrying who knows what here in the tan color. And in the blue here, you've got your crude oil tankers. And then you've got your LNG tankers here in red. And then you've got finally your LPG. That's the propane, liquefied petroleum gas tankers. And look at that little red circle. That's all missing in action. So the bulk carriers, what are they not bulk carrying? They're not bulk carrying fertilizer, aluminum, sulfur, sulfuric acid. There's all kinds of things that are just missing from that. And as well, the chemical product tankers, there were two major petrochemical refineries so far, one in Iran, one in Saudi Arabia, that took a bit of a blow. So there's all kinds of too many things to list and name here because we don't have the time for that. But just impress upon you that these two bottom pieces missing down here is an extraordinary blow to the world's supply chains. And we don't have any particular way of getting past that at this point in time. So with that, I hope you at least understand this, that United States gas prices, as soon as we start exporting even that last 1 million barrel per day, that's going to come out of inventories. And as inventories start to draw down, the price is going to go higher and higher. Further, right now, the price of oil is a lot higher than advertised in our so-called futures market. That, too, is a temporary condition, and it's going to have to reset. And it will reset every single day that this conflict, whatever you call it, it lasts. Every single day the strait remains closed is another day added to the chaos that's going to actually result when the so-called futures price and the real price of oil have to snap together all at once. All right. Hey, look, there's a lot more to this story back at peakprosperity.com in the full premium version of Everything I Got a Fat Pipe that just came out today. Now, listen, if you have wealth to protect and you understand the power of this kind of accurate information, then you absolutely need and deserve full access to all of my reports. So subscribe now for full access to today's audio or written report, whatever came out today, because I got stuff coming out pretty much every day. As well, access all of my premium content. Thank you for listening. Any questions or comments down below? Let's talk about this. This kind of detail matters. It really does. All right. Bye for now. I'm sure I'll be back with more very soon.